And welcome back to Coast with Mitch Horowitz joining us. Mitch, of course, a regular guest here on Coast to Coast. We're going to be talking about, well, the darker side of life. So stand by for that on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, noted author Mitch Horowitz back with us, of course. He's one of today's most widely known voices of spirituality. Mitch is a Penn Award-winning historian, a dear friend of Coast to Coast AM. He is the voice of the popular audiobooks, including Alcoholics Anonymous, and hosts a talk show, One Simple Idea, on the New Thought Channel. The Washington Post says Mitch treats ideas and movements with an even-handed intellectual studiousness that is sometimes too often lost in today's raised voice discussions. Ain't that the truth, Mitch? Welcome to the program.
Great to be here, George. Hope you're having a great night.
Yeah, I am. How about you? What's new with you, my friend?
We are getting our kitchen remodeled, and the apartment I'm sitting in New York City is an absolute wreck. But
as long as we don't hear hammering while you're on the air, I'm good with
done.
That.
This is one of the few quiet hours in New York City. I'm glad to be spending it with you and the Coast family.
That's cool. I was on Amazon today looking at some of the books that you've done and some of the things you're working on, and they had a lot of dates for later in the year.
Yep.
Is that what, paperback versions, or what does that mean?
Oh, well,
They've got one for a Miracle that says October 2018.
That's right. I have a new book called The Miracle Club, which is coming out in October.
Okay.
And The Miracle Club is my assessment of what really works in the whole mind power field. I survey 150 years of mind metaphysics and come to the best answers of what works and why.
Tonight we're going to talk about something that is kind of scary to a lot of people.
Yeah.
The dark side.
Yeah.
I want you to explain what that is.
You know, it's interesting, George. I've spent a lot of my career writing about positive mind mechanics and new thought and the uses of the mind for healing and the uses of prayer. But I came to feel this year that I'd been neglecting the dark side. And there's power there and there's truth there and there's something there that we can't shut out. The serpent in the garden, so to speak, did bring knowledge to Eve, did bring knowledge to the human race. And there are some times where we can't shy away from the dark side. There's power, there's truth on the dark side. And for some of us, quite frankly, we reach a point in our lives where we're not sure we're praying in the right way. We're not sure we're making the right appeal. And there may be truths on the dark side that we can no longer hide from. And that's something that I've been looking into in my own life and been researching in other people's lives.
Does the dark side necessarily mean evil?
Not necessarily, you know, because, George, the fact is the dark is the womb. The dark is where things are born from. If it weren't for darkness, we wouldn't be able to see the cosmos with our naked eye in the night skies. Darkness is a natural part of life. It's not something that should be necessarily thought of as evil or fearful, but there might be a side of you, sometimes it's called the shadow side, that you need to look into, that you need to honor. Maybe there's things you've been suppressing that you've kind of pushed down into the darkness of your psyche, and these things need to be let out.
Are there dangers, though, of dabbling in the dark side?
You know, it's an interesting question, and I've thought about that quite a bit. I think the greatest danger of all is kind of turning away from a vital, important part of ourselves. I think there's a much greater danger in living a life where we limit our search, where we limit our questions. Look, there's dangers all the time. Every day, every man and woman on earth is involved in a whole variety of ethical decisions. Every day, we face decisions whether or not to gossip, whether or not to spread rumors, what kind of entertainment to participate in. We're faced with ethical decisions all the time. So yes, there are risks on the dark side, but there are risks all around us. And I really do believe it's a much greater risk to turn away from the dark and to limit the parameters of our search.
There's debate, of course, of what is God, who is God, and, you know, there's also a group of people who are, you know, black mass supporters. They support,
yeah,
Lucifer, the devil.
Yeah.
What's their agenda? Are those all evil, bad people?
Not in my experience, George. You know, I used to turn away from things like, you know, veneration of Satan, veneration of Lucifer, and feel like I wanted absolutely no part of that trip, no part of those philosophies. But I took a deeper look, and I really feel that some of the ideas that people who participate in Satanist or Luciferian philosophies really are worth looking at. They believe in rebellion, in nonconformity, in building up the individual, in reversing the religious dictum, thy will be done, to my will be done. There's a self-assertive quality to these people. Frankly, in my opinion, there's a beautiful artistic aesthetic that many of these people have interjected into the world. There is a certain scent, a certain whiff of danger there, but there's also a self-assertion, a self-determination. And I think that their work deserves a second look. I'm thinking in particular, for example, of Anton LaVey, the founder of the Church of Satan, who died in 1997. Anton's book, The Satanic Bible, is one that I never really took seriously, but I changed my mind. I reread that book very, very carefully last year and this year, and I think there's important ideas in there about human striving, about human potential. Not everybody fits into a congregational religious structure. For people who are outsiders and who have felt alienated, some of the ideas that are emanating from the satanic, from work like Anton LaVey's, from work like Michael Aquino's, can be extraordinarily empowering, can be extraordinarily invigorating. I won't turn away from the dark side because I won't reject a question. And I feel like we are searchers, and that means searching everywhere.
Well, it does, but was Anton LaVey, would you consider him evil?
No, I really wouldn't. I
really
wouldn't. I think he was an upstart. He was a musician. He was an artist. I think he was a self-styled troublemaker in the best sense. You know, we are rebels. We like to think of ourselves as rebels, as nonconformists, as people who just don't go along with the flow. In a way, that's the most important archetype in our country. That's the cowboy. That's the outlaw. You know, Anton LaVey was somebody who completely embraced that archetype, that image. He wasn't an evil man. He was an extraordinarily creative man. He was a great artist. And he lived by his own inner light, and I think there was greatness in the man, frankly.
We lost a great man tonight, this morning in England. Stephen Hawking dies.
Stephen Hawking,
76 years old. What a great mind he had.
Yeah, unusual figure. You know, I knew people who had been associated with him, and they would tell me how, in addition to his genius, in addition to the spark of great insight and mental beauty that existed within the man, he was completely unembarrassed about his disability. He would absolutely not be embarrassed, would not allow himself to feel psychologically limited by his disability, and people were as impressed by that quality as they were by his intellect.
The fact that he lived so long in that condition is absolutely staggering.
Remarkable, remarkable. Lived with an artificial breathing machine that was invented in Tel Aviv, actually, and he was an extraordinary man. He demonstrated that there's so much to life that goes beyond the physical.
We were working on trying to get him on the program, and we got really close, and then we had a problem because apparently it takes him, after you ask him a question, a good 40 seconds or so to program and type his answers into his talking machine. And because of that, we would have had, blank air for those 40 seconds. I wanted to get him on the program live, of course. And, you know, we contemplated, well, maybe I should just tape him and then edit it and edit out those sounds. So we were working on something like that. And then we've lost him. So a great opportunity.
Interesting. In a world where we are so accustomed to instant gratification and to news traveling immediately over binary code, here was a man who took an unusually long amount of time to answer a question. It's a different way of life. It's a different measure of timing and portioning out one's time. He was one of the most unusual figures of the past century in this.
And what a mind. Oh, my gosh. He made you think.
Yeah,
that was, he said things like, be wary of telling the universe where we are because some extraterrestrials may not be friendly.
I remember well. He was very concerned about us being discovered by extraterrestrials rather than the other way around. he warned that you don't want to be the one who gets discovered. You want to be the one who's doing the discovering.
Absolutely.
And, which is another reason why I think no question can be left unasked, you know, because someone is going to ask it. Something's going to come looking for you if you don't go looking for it. He was also very concerned, of course, about artificial intelligence and the possibilities that artificial intelligence might find the individual obsolete at some point.
You have something called the anarchic magic.
What is that? Yeah, I take it from the political theory of anarchy, which says that our most natural state as social beings, as political beings, is to be left alone, is to be left to our own devices. And anarchic magic means that you devise your own spiritual ideas and your own spiritual rituals, that you can participate in any religious idea, any religious ritual, any form of veneration, any form of practice, and you can start and stop these things as quickly and as naturally as you like. Sometimes leaving behind one religious philosophy and embracing another can bring you tremendous vigor and tremendous energy. When you embrace a new set of ideas, you often do so without prejudices, without limits, without preconceptions of what can and can't be done. And you might decide one day that you're going to perform a ritual from a religion, for example, that's completely alien to you, or that you're going to dispense with any kind of congregation or liturgically based ritual, and you're going to invent your own. That's what anarchic magic is all about. It's bringing a spirit of anarchy to your own religious search, and the results can be just incredible, because you leave behind any sense of parameters, you leave behind any sense of limits, and your experiments become highly individualized. That's what I try to practice.
And you're a good guy, Mitch. I mean, so you don't dabble with evil things.
I don't dabble with evil things. I believe in loyalty. I believe in keeping your word. And I believe in abstaining from gossip or anything that does violence, verbal or otherwise, to other people. I believe in self-defense. But I think that the worst sin is forcibly limiting somebody else's striving for their own potential. As long as you're not forcibly limiting somebody else's striving for their own potential, by my lights, you're leading a good life.
Absolutely. Our dear friend Mitch Horowitz with us tonight. We're talking about the dark side. I guess, could you call it also the occult?
Yeah, sure. You know, I think that the occult, it's such a broad term. You know, it really means the search for hidden knowledge. It means the hidden. It means the unknown. And there's parts of the occult that people sometimes refer to as white magic. There's parts of the occult that people refer to as black magic. But the truth is, I want to throw away those distinctions today. In the year 2018, for me, my journey is to throw away distinctions of white and dark magic, inner and outer, even good and evil. I want to ask, what is the end product? Is this productive? Is this forwarding of myself as an individual? And as long as I'm not disrupting the life of somebody else, I call it good.
Now let's talk a little bit again about Lucifer, and people pray to Lucifer, as we were talking about with the black masses. They make appeals to Satan or Lucifer. Gosh, I don't endorse that, Mitch.
It sounds far out, and it sounds negative. It sounds scary. It sounds like something that people want to push away. But, you know, I was giving a lecture about this last week here in New York City, and I put this challenge to people, and I don't say this to be provocative, and I know your phone lines are going to light up after I say this, and I'm not trying to push anybody's buttons. But what if you've been praying to the wrong God? You know, what if within the individual there is an unfulfilled spiritual yearning that is not finding an outlet within the mainstream religious faiths? Ralph Waldo Emerson wrote, "If I am a child of the devil, then I will live from the devil." What if there is something in the individual that is being unfulfilled and he decides to turn from the light to the darkness, so to speak, and finds that sense of fulfillment and finds that sense of productivity and finds motion in his life where before there was stagnation? I don't think that's evil. I think that we have to accept that night follows day, spring follows winter. Life is cyclical, and sometimes turning towards the dark can be forwarding, can be productive, as long as you're not disrupting from the life of another person or committing an act of violence, physical or emotional, toward another person.
No, are we going to get calls about this next hour, Mitch?
I believe
it. Gosh.
I believe it.
Now, the Bible, though, if you read the Bible and look at its sections on Satan and Lucifer, I mean, we're not talking about a good person here or a good entity.
You know, I would issue this challenge to people. The story of Eve and the serpent is in Genesis 3. Now, you know, Genesis 3 is a chapter of just a few dozen lines. It's very sparse. It's very spare. The serpent is often associated with Satan. I would challenge anybody listening, if they're so moved, go back and read Genesis 3. Read it in any translation. You'll see, at least in my reading, that the serpent doesn't mislead Eve exactly. She says, if we eat from the tree of knowledge of good and evil, we're going to die. The serpent says, you will not die. Well, she did not. The serpent says, you will be illumined. You will gain intellect. You will gain discrimination. Those things are all true. They're also tragic because, of course, there's this act of fratricide in the very next chapter. Cain kills Abel. So it may be that with the introduction of different ideologies and different discrimination into the world, there's also human friction. That just may be a tragedy that's part of the human story. But the serpent does not lie to Eve, does not mislead Eve. And in some readings, the serpent is even seen as a political emancipator, as one that enlightens mankind, Lucifer, the light bearer. So I would say go back to Genesis 3, read it with fresh eyes, and see what you find. It's a very sparse account. Don't let anybody tell you what's in it, but read it without preconceptions.
But haven't there, Mitch, been satanic abuses and rituals that have done harm to animals and people?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up. I don't believe in physical sacrifices. Of course, the ancients used to practice physical sacrifices all the time. I don't believe that any animal should be killed for any purpose other than one that is absolutely necessary, whether that means eating.
And biblically, they sacrificed animals all the time.
All the time. That's not a practice that I endorse under any circumstances today. I don't think it's necessary. I would also say that, you know, there were all these, of course, satanic abuse scare stories that were running throughout the media in the 1980s, all of which turned out to be frauds, and lots of innocent folks got accused of things that they never participated in, and that's something I never want to go back to. Those satanic abuse stories back in the 1980s, books have been written about it, articles have been written about it, they were all frauds. It was all just a kind of national hysteria, and that's something we should never return to.
Bible does warn us, though, to stay away from this stuff.
It does. You're absolutely right, George. You know, there's so much in the Bible, and we often cherry-pick what we choose to decide is relevant today and what is not relevant today. You know, books like Leviticus and Deuteronomy are filled with all kinds of ritualistic prescriptions and prohibitions that, of course, we don't follow today. And in my view, the Bible was written by a vast number of people over a long stretch of time. And there are aspects of the Bible, in my reading, that are of time-bound and of local relevance, but not of universal relevance. And although people sometimes chafe at that description, there are strictures in the Bible that we disregard all the time today. I would never have started my study of the occult if I made an absolutely strict reading of the Bible, and certain aspects of the Bible are contradictory in that regard. I study astrology. I study different aspects of the occult. I think that the aspects of the Bible that are universally true are the moral strictures that we find, say, in the Beatitudes or the Sermon on the Mount. There are other things that I think were more of local, tribal, native importance back at the time of the writing and aren't universal prohibitions that belong to us today.
Mitch Horowitz with us. His website is his name, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. When we come back, we'll talk more about his thoughts about the dark side. Next hour, we'll take your phone calls with Mitch as we talk about this subject as well. And we're back with Mitch Horowitz as we talk about the dark side. Mitch, left-hand path. Tell us what that means.
Well, the left-hand path really means a devotion to self. It's a term that comes from the Vedas, from the ancient Hindu religion, and it's a kind of mysticism that doesn't seek God so much as it seeks the highest power in oneself. And so sometimes people will use the term left-hand path as another way of talking about Satanism or the dark side, but it's really something that is about seeking one's own highest self-development and power in the world. It reverses the maxim, thy will be done, to my will be done.
Have you always been, I'm not going to say you're a supporter of the dark side, but have you always tipped that way?
No, not really, George. You know, I've been on the show for so many years. You know, I've always been interested in the occult and all of its different reaches. And of course, for a long time, I've been interested in New Thought and mind metaphysics. But to be perfectly frank with you, I felt like my search was getting a little bit stale. I felt like I was circling around some of the same topics, and I was in danger of developing a kind of closed circuit approach to spirituality. I didn't feel my search was broad enough. And I was reading a new book called A Culture by a brilliant Swedish writer named Carl Abrahamsson. And he wrote about Anton LaVey, the founder of the Church of Satan, in one of his chapters. And I realized that I had previously dismissed this man, Anton LaVey, as a kind of showman or as a carnival figure. I didn't think he was a good guy. I didn't think he was an interesting guy. But in Carl's writing, I just gleaned a whole new side of Anton, and I began to look at the dark side in a different way, and I thought to myself, you know, this is a way to break the circuit. This is an area that I haven't adequately and maturely explored. And I realized there's a different definition, and there's a different esoteric tradition of the satanic than the one we have been brought up to understand as just a force of evil or darkness of the wrong kind or depravity. And I began to look at the satanic, at the dark, at the left-hand path in a different way, without prejudices and without preconceptions. Look, it's part of life. You know, if you want to think from a biblical perspective, we're all descendants of Cain, in a sense, because of course Abel had no bloodline. His life was discontinued. It's an innate part of us. It's an innate part of life. And you can say, well, it's something that must be defeated and overcome, or you can say it's something that has to be explored. I chose the path of exploration, and it has revitalized my search. It's given me a whole new set of questions.
Has there been a recent exorcism in the White House?
Oh, that's interesting.
Or is that just talk?
Yeah, this was widely reported. This was widely reported. There were many different news stations reporting that in the hours preceding the Trump's moving into the White House, Melania Trump insisted to her husband that there be some sort of an exorcism of the West Wing, and that this exorcism was performed by some sort of evangelical ministerial figures. And the headlines were awfully interesting, but when you peel back the onion, the story gets weaker and weaker. There's one source behind this story, and it's a rather flamboyant evangelical minister from West Lafayette, Indiana, who actually has never visited the White House and who didn't glean any of this firsthand, but he said there were unnamed sources in the White House who told him that Melania had insisted upon some sort of exorcism of the West Wing during the hours of transition between the departure of the Obamas and the arrival of the Trumps. And this minister from Indiana has never identified his sources, has never been in touch with the Trumps, and has never visited the White House. So the story started to get thinner and thinner. So it went from being an interesting news item to what we can probably consider just an urban legend. I don't think there has been an exorcism in the White House.
If there was, who were they trying to exorcise?
Well, you know, the minister had stories about how Bill and Hillary Clinton had visited Haiti and witnessed a voodoo ceremony. Now, of course, voodoo is a proper religion in certain Afro-Caribbean nations. It's not something that I associate with evil, but this minister was painting it in those terms, and he was saying that there was some sort of introduction of evil spirits into the White House thanks to the Clintons and their visit to Haiti. Now, interestingly enough, when Hillary Clinton was first lady during Bill Clinton's first term, the Washington Post reported that Hillary held seances in the White House. Now, it is true that Hillary did hold sessions in the White House with a New Age teacher who's a friend of mine named Jean Houston. And she and Jean undertook some creativity exercises where Jean asked Hillary to imagine having conversations with her hero, Eleanor Roosevelt, a legendary first lady. And this got translated by Bob Woodward at the Washington Post into seances in the White House. It wasn't really seances. These were creativity exercises, but Jean was never really able to get that across to Woodward. So the story got carried that Hillary was practicing seances in the West Wing.
What is your take on Adam and Eve and the serpent, the devil? What was that all about?
Well, it's interesting. You know, first of all, the serpent in Genesis 3 is never actually identified as the devil. It was only later generations of biblical scholars and early church fathers and Hebraic figures who sometimes associated the serpent with the devil. Now, interestingly enough, you know, in the 19th century, there were artists and poets and political figures who actually began to reinterpret the serpent as a kind of political emancipator of Eve. There were early feminists in the 19th century who saw Satan as a kind of liberatory figure. You know, there were some who saw the story in Genesis 3 as the story of Satan as the real creator of man, because he was the one who introduced the idea of a discriminating intellect into human life. Before this, we were these sort of undifferentiated automatons. What kind of paradise is it if you don't have judgment, if you don't have discrimination, if you don't have arts and sciences? But of course, once you have those things, it also introduces different ideologies into human life. And these different ideologies erupted into human friction, where you had this fratricidal murder of Cain killing Abel. So we have to ask ourselves, if we have choice, if we have intellect, does that inevitably introduce friction and violence into human life? Were Cain and Abel maybe just part of a human drama that none of us can really escape from? Or is there another way? But there's a whole different reading that you can bring to Genesis 3 and other parts of the Bible that sees Satan not as an evil tempter, but as a rebel, as a nonconformist, as one who introduces the light of intellect into the human form. The term Lucifer is a Latin term for light bearer, and in some traditions, that's the role that Satan plays.
Is it conceivable that Satan was a good entity? God, I hate to even ask that question.
I know, it's a tough question to ask, and I know there are...
It violates everything I was taught in catechism and in Catholic stuff.
Of course, and all across America right now, there are radios that just got thrown across the room, you know. These are tough questions to ask, and of course, we don't ask them to provoke, we don't ask them to push buttons, we ask them in the name of search, of exploration, and I think that there are certain readings in which Satan can be seen as a positive figure, as a productive figure, as a figure who introduced the light of intellect into human life. We don't want to be automatons. We don't want to be this kind of nondescript, consensus-based mass of humanity. Is that paradise? Is that living in paradise? And the Creator, of course, if one follows the biblical storyline, was the one who formed this tree of knowledge of good and evil, planted it in the midst of the garden. And then the serpent came along, also the object of the Creator, also that which sprang from the Creator, and said, who says you can't taste of this? Of course you can taste of this. Of course you won't die. And then you'll be discriminating. You'll be like the gods. And Eve did partake of the apple. She did not die. Intellect was introduced into the world, and friction was introduced into the world. Maybe it was inevitable. And I think Satan can be seen in a counter reading, in an esoteric reading, as a source of good. I know that goes against everything that we've been taught, and I'm not saying that to provoke. I'm saying that because I just want people to question deeply. And you can go back to these texts and read them. What's there is very spare. It's very open to interpretation in any translation. And I think that there is a counter reading that's very possible.
What do you think evil is then?
I think evil is violence, emotional violence or physical violence, not self-defense, but violence. Anything that strips another person of his or her aspiration or striving for his or her highest potential, that's evil.
Your take on Ouija boards.
My take on Ouija boards. You know,
because that was included in one of your books, wasn't it?
What's that?
That was included in one of your books.
Oh, yes, sir.
On Occult America.
Occult America called, yeah. Don't Try This at Home. But I've softened my stance on Ouija boards.
Have you really? Karen Dahlman, who's an expert on Ouija boards, she must have gotten to you.
Yeah, right. I know a lot of people worry that Ouija boards are a door to the dark side, are really a very dangerous door to the unknown. Well, you know, social media is also a dangerous door to the unknown. I think kids are at greater risk fishing around online, or at least at as much a risk fishing around online as they are playing around with a Ouija board. The fact is, the Ouija board has introduced some very good things into our world. It's introduced beautiful poetry from figures like Jane Roberts and James Merrill. There is a religion in the nation of Vietnam called Cao Daism, which means religion of the high palace. Next to Catholicism and Buddhism, it's the third most popular religion in the country. It was channeled through a Ouija board in the early 20th century, and it may interest students of history to know that the Cao Daist religion was a very pro-American religion, and that practitioners of Cao Daism maintained their own private militia, which sided first with the French and later with the Americans in the Vietnam War, and they continued to side with the Americans up until 1975, when America withdrew and the war came to an end. They were some of America's staunchest allies in the Vietnam War, and they practiced a religion that came through a Ouija board. So I can't tell people, don't use the Ouija board. It's evil. It's bad.
Maybe it's evil in the wrong hands, Mitch.
In the wrong hands. And look, I'm not going to say that everything is wonderful out there. If you are playing around with the Ouija board, you don't know what you're getting. You may be contacting some spirit or some entity, or frankly, some aspect of your own subconscious that's better left undisturbed. The same thing is true on social media. When you put a line out there, you don't know what you're getting, and you have to use aggressive common sense.
One of my concerns about the dark side, especially with social media, is its effect on younger people who aren't thinking in terms of, you know, the things you've been talking about tonight. They do it almost like a cult club, and I think that's dangerous.
It's an interesting question, George. You know, I think some of the most sensitive, wonderful young people are those who are outsiders, are those who have an artistic bent, some of the young people who are into goth culture, for example. I think they're terrific. I think they break away from the herd. They make their own way. They have a real artistic, rebellious, nonconformist quality. I mean, part of what we love in our country is that nonconformist individuality. Well, you know, you can't just put a label on that and say, well, we like one kind but not another kind. People have got to find their own ways. And in many regards, the deepest purpose of our country, the greatest part of our country, is the protection of the individual search for meaning. And that extends to young people as well. And we have to let people experiment with different ethical, religious, political, cultural ideals. And if that takes them into the occult or into the goth subculture, in my personal experience, and I'm the father of two adolescents, some of the most wonderful kids I know are people who have taken that path. They have a beautiful, romantic, artistic bent to them, and I think it should be encouraged. I'm not worried when I see kids going down that road.
Hitler dabbled with the occult, and I think he was probably a Satanist, wasn't he?
Well, I wouldn't say that, George. You know, I think that Hitler violated what I would say is the ultimate principle of Satanism, which is that you must do nothing to disrupt another person's aspiration, quest for their own highest potential. And, of course, Hitler did that on a mass scale. Some of his deputies were more into the occult than he was, and some of the people who were known as occult practitioners in Nazi Germany themselves wound up in concentration camps. There was a man named Karl Ernst Kraft, who was known as Hitler's astrologer. He died en route to a concentration camp. You know, the Nazis and Hitler's inner circle tended to embrace certain occult symbols and ideas temporarily, and then when they were no longer useful or they became threatening to somebody's political interests or something, they would be disposed of just like any other figure in the Third Reich who no longer fit in. These people tended to clip and paste things temporarily that they were interested in and then discard them very brutally. And that was true of some of the occultists who found their way into the inner circle of the Nazis and then also found themselves imprisoned and very often killed.
Mitch Horowitz with us. His website, again, is his name, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. We're going to take calls next hour with Mitch as we talk about the dark side and Satan as well. Are you saying Satan got a bum rap in the Bible?
You know, to be honest with you, George, I really am saying that. I think there's a different reading that we can bring to the Bible. I think there's a fresh reading. I don't think we should just repeat everything that we heard growing up. I'm not saying it's all wrong. Some of it may be very true. But we can go back, and there's so few passages in the Bible that actually reference Satan. Go back to the beginning. Go back to Genesis 3. See what's there in any translation and take a new measure. I agree with that statement. I do think there has been a kind of historical and cultural bum rap, so to speak.
Well, who were the fallen angels, the fallen ones?
Well, you know, they could be seen, frankly, as rebellious figures. They could be seen as a kind of yin-yang representation of darkness and light that maybe is necessary and inevitable and productive to human life and to human development.
Interesting take on all of this. You've really softened your approach.
Yeah, well, you know, George, I've strengthened my question is what I've really done. I never want my search to get stale. I don't want to find myself, you know, coming on the show or talking to your audience or to other folks and saying the same things over and over. I always try to share where I am in my search in the most honest way possible. And so this is a new corridor that I'm looking down. It's not the only thing that I'm involved in, surely. I'm still the same Mitch, but I felt like I needed to ask questions that I wasn't asking before.
All right, Mitch, stay with us. We're going to come back with our final hour in just a moment here on Coast to Coast AM and take phone calls with you. I've got a few more questions for you. You wrote an article called The Devil's Reading List, and I want to get your take on some people who have dabbled in the satanic end, and it hasn't really come out favorably for them. I want to get your take on that as well. Need to email me? It's George at coasttocoastam.com.